statements and opinions by guests of Mysterious Radio are not to be considered as endorsed by sponsors or affiliated networks. Any rebroadcast, reproduction, or other use of this podcast without the express written consent of Mysterious Radio is strictly prohibited.
Get ready for a night filled with conspiracies, strange places, the paranormal, UFOs, legends, and myths from around the world. With your hosts, K-Town, on Mysterious Radio.
Hi there, thank you for joining me tonight for another edition of Mysterious Radio. I'm your host, K-Town, and tonight my special guest is researcher Timothy Renner, and he's written a book called Bigfoot, West Coast Wild Men, A History of Wild Men, Gorillas, and Other Hairy Monsters in California, Oregon, and Washington State. Now, this book is available right now on paperback and Kindle Unlimited. Timothy says these monsters have been called many names, most commonly Bigfoot and Sasquatch, but these terms have only been in our popular vocabulary since the 1950s. And long before that, people were seeing and documenting these creatures. So he's got many newspaper accounts and all kinds of articles and things. And this book is great if you're interested in Bigfoot. My special guest is Timothy Renner, here to talk about Bigfoot, West Coast Wild Men. All right, my special guest tonight is author Timothy Renner. He's going to be discussing historical Bigfoot cases from two of his books called Bigfoot in Pennsylvania and Bigfoot West Coast Wild Men. If you love anything about Bigfoot, you've got to pick up these copies for yourself, and you can get these on Amazon.com. Timothy, this is your first time on the show, and I want to welcome you to Mysterious Radio.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I appreciate your time. And first off the top, I want to tell you, book is amazing. This is a book, to me, it's a Bigfoot lover's heaven. And the search for Bigfoot has captured the world's imagination. We've all patiently waited to see if someone will ever find one, or if we'll get any kind of clear video evidence of the creature that has really just been a master at keeping its secrets over the years. But before we get into this mystery, Timothy, please tell us how you got interested in this research for this elusive creature.
Well, I grew up in what I call the kind of golden age of Bigfoot. I was born in 1970. So the Patterson-Gimlin film happened just, you know, before I came into the world, but it In Search Of was on when I was a kid. And a lot of Bigfoot books, and the Legend of Boggy Creek movie came out in the 70s. So it was a time of a lot of fascination with Bigfoot, and I had a lot to look at and a lot of interest there. When I became a teenager, I kind of faded away from it for a while. But then when the internet came around again, I started getting a little more interested in it and kind of keeping up on it a little bit. But I didn't really jump in with both feet until my first book, which is called Beyond the Seventh Gate, that just deals with three counties in Pennsylvania. It's not all Bigfoot, but there's some Bigfoot in it. And I found so many Bigfoot reports for those three counties. I was shocked. I expected to find a couple, maybe, but not. But I found between 50 and 100 in that book. And once that happened, I really just kind of jumped in with both feet. It really fired me up.
Okay, so since you brought it up, what do you think about the Patterson film?
I think you can find as many people to say it's real as you can to say it's fake, both experts and laymen on both sides. I personally think it's real. I don't think anyone could have done that in 1967 with the technology at the time. But, you know, there are many experts that will disagree with me.
Okay, very good. It's your honest opinion, so that's all we wanted. All right, I believe it's real too, honestly. I've got to know, how long did it take you to go about finding all these newspaper reports of Bigfoot sightings all the way back to the 1800s?
Oh, I spend a lot of time researching. I couldn't put a number on it. It's a full-time job, researching.
I bet. All right. So I commend you on that. That is awesome. That shows that you're dedicated. Is there a general consensus as to what Bigfoot really is?
No, you get as many theories with that as you do with UFOs and anything else in the paranormal. Some people think it's a undiscovered primate. Some people think it's a relic hominid. Some people think it's something like a being from another dimension, or even an alien being. So until we have a specimen of some sort, I think we're going to be arguing that point.
Okay. So what do you think it is?
I refuse to say. I don't know. I'm open to all of the above. And if you catch me on any particular day, like, you know, one day I may be leaning more towards an undiscovered primate. I'm more inclined to think relic hominid than undiscovered primate, something that's in our family tree somehow. You know, catch me on another day when I'm surrounded by a lot of particularly weird phenomenon associated with it, and I start really seriously considering these dimensional aspects, or maybe that it has some very, very strange abilities. I will say that there's so much strangeness around these creatures that even if they are natural animals, they must have access to something that we don't, some either quantum physics or I think the dimensional thing that people use to explain it is it, right now it's science fiction. We don't have any proof that they can do that, but it's, you know, it's a good working theory, I suppose, until we have another, because people report some very strange things with these creatures.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So, Timothy, what part of the country are you located?
South Central Pennsylvania.
Okay. All right. So have sightings there been on the rise in recent years?
They come and go in waves. We tend to get flaps in most parts of Pennsylvania. They'll come in waves. We'll have a really active year and then or 2 years. And then for a while, things will kind of die down.
Okay. I want to ask you before we talk about some of these articles here or these reports. Have you ever had a Bigfoot sighting?
Not that I can confirm. I saw something very big and very fast on two occasions in two different locations, but I can't say honestly what it was. It was so fast that it just shot out of sight both times very quickly, faster than anything else I've ever seen in the woods. But I didn't really get a good beat on it.
Okay. So from the newspaper reports, are the descriptions of this creature pretty much the same?
Yeah. Now descriptions vary even with witnesses today. You get everything from it looked like a caveman to it looked like a giant gorilla, and some things in between. Sometimes it'll be more like a baboon and so forth. The historical reports tend to bear out that variety. Whatever these creatures are, they're either different types or I don't know if they're sort of different breeds or they just have a really broad selection of appearances throughout the species.
So let's talk about some cases in California. And one such case I'd like for you to tell us about is the one, I think the description is Dead Man's Hole. Can you tell us what those two hunters encountered that day?
So these were two hunters that went to this area named Dead Man's Hole. Now, Dead Man's Hole was a isolated hollow that was in northern San Diego County. It was a stagecoach stop. They would stop stagecoaches there to water the horses. And in 1888, they found at least seven human corpses. That's the amount that I could find reporting of. There may have been more, but at least seven human corpses were found in the area. Many of these were brutally strangled and beaten when they found them. So these hunters go into this hollow, this dead man's hole. I can just go right to the article if you'd like.
Sure, go right ahead. That's fine.
Okay. So hunters seldom venture into Dead Man's Hole, partly because of the general awe and fear of the place, but more especially because it is well known that there is no game there. Last Thursday, however, two venturesome hunters named Edward Dow and Charles Cox determined to explore the dark and mysterious canyon. After a hard struggle, they had proceeded for about a mile through the tangled maze of brush and rocks. At each step, the canyon became narrower and their progress was necessarily slower. Up to a certain point, they had seen or heard nothing extraordinary, and the silence was quite oppressive. I want to stop here and just say that this silence is reported all the time in Bigfoot reports. People, modern reports and the older ones, they'll say the woods will go dead quiet when these things are around. So back to the article. The silence was quite oppressive and added to their natural fear of the mysterious place. The boulders and cuts in the canyon side ahead of them were gradually becoming deeper and more impassable. The explorers had almost made up their minds to turn back when suddenly they were startled by a slight rustle ahead of them, and almost immediately a crushing sound, as of some heavy object moving through the brush. The brush and rocks impeded the view, and the hunters scrambled up the canyon sides as quickly as they could to a commanding point. The sight that met their gaze almost paralyzed them with fear. An immense, unwieldy animal that from the rear resembled a bear was making rapid strides through the narrow dell. Its legs were long, and they were used with such ease and facility in climbing over the rocks and logs that on second thought, the animal appeared more like an immense gorilla. Its hair was dark brown. It was at least 6 feet in height. The front legs from their use resembled arms, and the beast moved almost uprightly like a man or a monkey. Its body was quite round and covered with extremely long hair, much unlike the hair of any animal. The hind legs or feet from the knees down were the most peculiar features on the strange being. They were extremely broad and long. The insides of them upon which the animal walked were entirely bare of hair. Every time it made a move, it exposed to view the bottom of its immense paws. Except for the hair, the arms and hands of the beast greatly resembled those of a human being. It goes on and they follow the creature for a while and it starts climbing up a rock and the one shoots the creature. And apparently kills it. With the cry like that of a human being, the beast instantly fell in a hideous heap across the boulder. Slowly and with much trepidation, the hunters made their way to the prostrate object. It proved to be dead, shot through the breast. The face was exposed to view as it lay on its side of the rock. The features were unmistakable Indian in character. The hairs on the face were few and black, and on the head it was long and jet black, like that of an Indian. The skin of the face was very dark and wrinkled. The teeth, which were partially exposed by the position of the mouth, were plainly those of a carnivorous animal. They were longer than those of a human being. This was the only feature of the face and head that did not exactly resemble the characteristics of an Indian. Perhaps the most singular point about the strange creature was the disproportion between its head and body. The former was not larger than that of an ordinary man, and yet the body would weigh 400 pounds. The long muscular arms were provided with a pair of hands, almost exactly like those of a man. There were five fingers on each hand. The outside of the fingers were covered in hair, but the inside skin was bare and white and thickly calloused in places. The feet, if such they could be called, were entirely unlike anything hunters had seen. They were 2 feet long and 8 inches broad and covered on the bottom with a hard substance like that of a dog. The being was of the male sex. It was evidently a cross between an Indian and some carnivorous animal. Such monstrosities, anthropologists say, are often born into the world, and many of them are mentioned in natural history. They proceed to go toward the cave to which this thing was headed, and inside they find several piles of bones, and among these were, they go back to the article, it says, the portions of human skeletons. Five human skulls were lying together. The half man and half beast was evidently also a semi-cannibal. So there were bones of goats in there as well, but they said five skulls of humans they found in that.
So are there the reports of this half man, half creature, whatever it is, are those reports? That's the first time I ever heard of something or somebody actually reporting that they see a half man and half Bigfoot, I guess.
Well, yeah, and these old reports, they didn't have the name Bigfoot or Sasquatch. We didn't really start using those in popular culture until really the 1970s. Bigfoot was probably coined in the 1950s, but it didn't really enter our popular vocabulary until the 70s. So they didn't really know what to call these things. That's why most of the time they call them wild men, which really is a disservice to the size and ferocious look of these creatures, but they didn't really know what else to call them. They were upright walking. They walked like a man. They're kind of shaped like a man and they were covered in hair. So they get towards the late 1800s when they start to become aware of the mountain gorilla from Africa, people then start calling them gorillas. But in the 1800s, they tend to get called wild men or half men, half animals, or sometimes they confuse, I think, because this was right after Darwin, right around Darwin, I think they kind of confuse that notion. And there's this sort of idea that if people leave society and walk off into the woods, they'll grow hair all over their bodies and become these wild men. So there's a whole lot kind of bound up in that. But mostly it comes from the fact that they didn't really have the names Bigfoot. So they didn't know what they were looking at when they were seeing these things.
Okay, well, that makes sense. All right. So that's a very strange report there. Have you ever seen, or has anybody ever been able to dig up an old photo of one of these things dead?
No. I found a follow-up article which didn't make it into the book that said these guys did take the body into the nearest town for display, but it doesn't say where it went after that or what happened to it or anything, which by the way, is not unusual, even with modern Bigfoot reports of hunters shooting these creatures. For whatever reason, the bodies never seem to materialize. And, you know, these are very otherwise honest people. They have no reason to lie for the most part. And there's always something happens to the bodies. It's very, very strange. It's presumably, if they leave them in the woods to come back later, the other creatures take them. But often you'll find reports of, you know, strange black vans, you know, showing up, unmarked black vans, and, you know, spiriting the bodies away and so forth. So the fact that the body has disappeared, you know, after the one article, to me is one of those, yeah, of course, kind of things, because it just happens all the time with the Bigfoot.
All right. I want to talk about cases where someone has reported seeing a wild woman.
Yeah. And I think I got, there's one in the California book where a fellow sees what he calls gorillas, and they were at his campsite, and he hides and watches them come back. And he says one is very obvious, a woman from her appearance. Yeah, there's a couple good ones from Pennsylvania. There's one where a wild woman is beckons a child in Pennsylvania, and actually picks up the child for a time and starts to carry it away. But her mother and father chase after her. She ends up dropping it. So yeah, there are reports. They're less frequent. You definitely get more wild man reports than wild woman reports, but they're out there.
As far as California is concerned, are there any reports that may be connected with someone that went missing?
The missing reports I have more like temporary kidnaps on the West Coast. It seems like people were temporarily kidnapped and came back, or there were attempted kidnappings. But I don't think I have anything in that book of missing people.
All right. No, that's fine. That's fine.
In the Pennsylvania book, I know I do.
Okay. We're going to talk about that. All right. So, let me ask you something about the Bigfoot itself. Have you ever went Bigfoot hunting?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Okay. So what would one need in order to go hunt for Bigfoot?
Well, mostly, I think most people are under agreement now that you just kind of put yourself out there and do what you would normally do as a camper, and don't be conspicuous about hunting for Bigfoot. In other words, the going out in the woods and whooping and knocking on trees, it might work. But what people have the most success with, it seems, is just going out in the woods and sitting and letting these creatures come to them. You go into an area where they're known to be and just sit and see what happens.
Timothy, have you seen any credible evidence in all your years of researching this of someone finding some hair or video or a casting of a footprint? Have you seen anything that's credible?
Yeah, I've seen some really, really interesting casts. I've seen hair that was collected along with a 2-mile trackway in the county in which I live. In 1978, there was a 2-mile trackway across a farm and over hills and across the creek. And apparently where it stepped over a barbed wire fence, there was some hair which was collected. It's very, very strange, very coarse, long hair. And those tracks were cast. There were several tracks cast in the area, some of which I've been able to inspect and hold. There's a Bigfoot researcher named Bob Chance who was very nice to me and let me come down and look through his collection and shared his report records with me going back to the early 70s.
Okay. Now, concerning the hair samples, have they did any type of testing as far as DNA is concerned?
I know that the samples that were collected in the 70s were sent away and returned as unknown primate. At that time, they weren't doing DNA tests on them. As far as modern samples, the samples from around here, not to my knowledge, I don't think they've been sent away for DNA. But I know other people have, and you get these mixed results. They tend to come back inconclusive, and I'm not a DNA expert, but I know that there's Dr. Ketchum's study said that I believe the maternal line comes back human and the paternal as something completely unknown. And that's a very controversial study as well. So it's sort of beyond my expertise. But I kind of wait with interest to see if we're going to get any more DNA studies.
What about the castings, the prints that they find? I mean, couldn't someone really, you know, fake those?
Well, people have tried, and there are experts like Dr. Jeff Meldrum, who is very, very hard to fool. He's an animal, a primate foot anatomy is like his specialty. And he's identified features in these tracks that you'd have to be an expert on his level to fake them. Things like a mid-tarsal break, which to my knowledge, maybe Dr. Bindernagel was talking about before Dr. Meldrum. I'm not sure, but I know that, you know, I had never heard it talked about before Dr. Meldrum talked about it. And this is something that you find in other primates and not in humans. And he recognized these in the tracks and things like dermal ridges as well. You know, the equivalent of fingerprints on the feet are very, very difficult to fake. I mean, even special effects, you know, the highest paid special effects people find it very, very difficult to fake things like that.
I want to ask you about the shows that are really popular now on television. Do you find that they are doing a disservice when it comes to the credibility of Bigfoot, or are they actually helping the cause?
I think it gets a lot of people interested, and it probably helps overall in that people are less afraid to talk about it. I think witnesses are a lot less afraid to come forward and talk about it now. There's still a bit of trepidation, and understandably, on a lot of witnesses' parts. They don't want to be seen as crazy, or a lot of them just, it's such a frightening or just generally upsetting experience that they don't want to talk about it. But I think these shows in general have made it easier for people to talk about, which overall is a good thing. Now my opinions vary on depending on the show, but in general, I think it's been a good thing.
All right. My special guest tonight is author Timothy Renner, and we have more on historical Bigfoot encounters when we return right after this. We are back, and my special guest is author Timothy Renner, and we're talking about his books, Bigfoot in Pennsylvania and Bigfoot West Coast Wild Men. Both of those are available on Amazon.com. Now, Timothy, I want to ask you, do you know if any cases, or do you know of any cases where someone reported seeing a family of these creatures?
As far as in my books, I don't think so, but there have been, I know there's been modern reports where people reported seeing young ones and adults together.
All right. Now, let's talk about some things happening in Pennsylvania there. Can you share with us some reports that come to mind about the monster gorillas?
Yeah. So in 1920, this sort of gorilla flap happens, 1920 and 21, and you can almost take a map and kind of from the newspaper reports, follow these creatures across Pennsylvania. I do think there's more than one. I think it was a group of creatures because some are reported as being 7 foot tall and huge, and others are reported as being as short as 5 feet tall. So I definitely think people are seeing more than one creature. And the newspapers at the time keep saying they think it's an escaped gorilla, but it's important to note that there weren't that many gorillas in the country at that time. The ones that were reported on as if they were celebrities. I think the New York Zoo had one, and Barnum had one, and not too many other people had one. They were very, very expensive, and we didn't know how to care for them. So we'd bring them over from Africa, and they'd often die in captivity, which is, you can find reports of that in the paper as well. So the idea that these creatures, which, by the way, were tropical creatures, and these reports are throughout the winter of that year, well, going into the summer of 1921, but they start in December of 1920. It's a very cold winter. These tropical creatures, they wouldn't have had anything to eat. They wouldn't have survived the winter. So the idea that these are escaped circus gorillas just doesn't pan out. But it starts, they see these gorillas in some mines, and then they kind of move to the center of the state. And one of my favorite is the Samuel Bowlegg attack. And this is right in the beginning of this whole gorilla flap. And it's in Snyder County, Pennsylvania. The appearance of a man-ape or gorilla in the mountains of Snyder County has caused great excitement among the residents of the section where the animal was seen. The big ape was first seen three weeks ago by Samuel Bowlegg of Miser, a small town in Snyder County. The animal is supposed to be one that escaped some time ago from a carnival and which has been seen living in the mountains of that section of the state. Samuel and Margaret Bowlegg, the children of Charles Bowlegg, were gathering kindling wood one night in November with the light of a search lamp when a huge animal, about 7 feet tall and that stood up like a man, was discovered by the children within the light. It looked to them like a huge monkey, and when discovered, dropped on all fours and ambled away, soon disappearing in the darkness. A week later, the same animal was discovered in a cornfield on the Bowlegg farm, which is at the foot of the mountain. Samuel procured a .32 caliber rifle and took a shot at the huge man creature, evidently wounding it as it fell at the shot, rolling over several times on the ground. The boy and his father trailed the wounded ape some distance by the blood, but were unable to overtake it and at length gave up pursuit. On Monday night of the present week, the strange creature made its third appearance on the Bowlegg farm. Charles Bowlegg was engaged in chopping wood by the light of a lantern when the ape approached near enough to be seen. The son ran to the house and procured the rifle, but before he could shoot the gorilla, it viciously attacked him, knocking him down and breaking his arm, and was finally driven away by the father. The lad lay on the ground in an unconscious condition. He was taken to the house and soon after recovered his senses, and it was found that he was not seriously injured. He suffered much from shock, but is expected to be fully recovered in a short time. A large number of men armed with rifles started out to hunt the animal, but about 100 Lewistown hunters are scouring the Narrows and surrounding country toward the Snyder County line in the hope of getting a shot at the huge creature and killing it, as its presence has caused the greatest consternation in that section, the gorilla being a very dangerous animal on account of its great size, strength, and savage nature. So that kind of really sort of kicks off the rest of the gorilla flap. It goes on to if it's the same creature or one of the other creatures attacks a motorist in his car. It goes again through the state and ends up in Gettysburg and walks into the town of Gettysburg one of the creatures does, a shorter creature, right on York Street, which is basically the main street in that part of Gettysburg. And someone shoots it and thinks they killed it and walks over to it. It jumped up and chased the guy back into his house. And that's one of the last reports of the creature in Pennsylvania.
Wow, very strange. Does this put you in mind of reports? People were actually saying that they saw the largest, I guess this was the largest orangutan.
The Gigantopithecus.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it's possible. I think that's one of the least likely options for whatever these things are. And that's just based on Gigantopithecus was in Asia. We don't have any record of it being here. I mean, it could have crossed the land bridge when humans did, but it just seems less likely than this being some sort of relic hominid or it's just something we completely don't understand.
Do you think that a creature of this size could really hide for this long without someone getting like some clear video evidence of it?
That's why I say there's something very weird about it. No, not a natural animal. That's why I think there's something more going on with it. Trail cams don't seem to pick it up. Photographs seem to always be blurry. We don't have a specimen sample. I just feel like there's something very, very strange around these creatures that we don't quite understand yet that makes them different from a gorilla or from, you know, any other animal you might find in the woods.
All right. So there's another disappearance thought to be connected with a Bigfoot in Pennsylvania, but it concerned a little girl named Florence Hughes. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. So this is from 1888. And if people are familiar with David Pilates and the missing 411 kind of reports, there's a lot of he tracks a lot of missing people, modern missing people. He does historical stuff, too. But this report sounds very much it has very much in common with the reports he reports. So this is 1888. It's from the Bradford era, July 21st, 1888. Mysterious disappearance of little Florence Hughes. Friday forenoon, Florence Hughes, the 2-year-old daughter of John Hughes, an employee of the Bradford Oil Company who lives in the Rutherford farm, was playing in the vicinity with two other children. The little one's playmates left her alone while they were seeking flowers in a clump of underbrush nearby, and when they returned, she was gone. Mr. and Mrs. Hughes were immediately notified and instituted a rigorous search, but could find no trace of the missing one. All day long, the fruitless search was kept up. In the evening, a crowd started out from this city, swelling the number in the searching party to over 100. Every nook and spot in the woods and fields within a radius of 1 mile was examined closely, but without success. The lost babe could not be found. The parents are nearly distracted and have keen sympathy of many friends in their trouble. It is believed the child has been kidnapped and stolen away. The Era contained an account of a supposed wild being a few days ago who has been seen in the locality of late, and it is now feared the loathsome wretch has spirited the child away to his lair in the hills. Major Adsett of the Bradford Oil Company ordered men employed under his direction to prosecute the search until a clue is found somewhere. These, together with a large band of volunteer searchers, spent the night diligently seeking for the missing child. At a late hour, nothing had been heard from the missing one. Florence is a handsome child. She wore Friday a checked gingham sailor suit. She has long brown curly hair, round face, brown eyes, and rosy cheeks, and is stoutly built. Any information concerning her whereabouts will be joyfully received by the distracted parents. And then it goes on, no trace of the little one. This is a later report. Florence, the little two-year-old girl of John Hughes, who has been missing from home since 10 o'clock this morning, has not been found, although there were at least 200 men and boys with torches and lanterns scouring the woods all evening. So far, the search has been fruitless. It is thought that she may have been carried away by the wild man who was seen by several in this locality recently. The parents are nearly frantic and earnestly request assistance to continue the search tomorrow morning. All who will kindly assist will please meet at J.T. Jones Boiler House, Rutherford Farm, 8 p.m. sharp. And then it goes on later to say the search is abandoned. A party consisting of J.P. Taylor, Thomas Mills, and two members of the Era staff visited Rutherford District at 2 o'clock this morning and learned that no trace had been found of the lost child. A heavy fog hung over the woods, and the search was abandoned until daylight. And that that heavy fog is another sort of indicator. Pilates has noted bad weather tends to move in when these people go missing. So it just has a lot in common with the cases he's collected. But this one does note that this wild man or wild being had been seen in the area.
Timothy, during your research, did you find any sightings where law enforcement was involved with the search of a reported sighting?
So they've been seeing the people have been seeing this what they're calling a gorilla around Darby, Pennsylvania in 1906. It had been seen on people's farms. A guy had set out bear traps for it, which he found broken. He had tied him to it or fastened him to a tree with steel cables. He found the cable snapped. So something very strong. And they were reporting this all over this town. So this is November 27th, 1906. Darby, Pennsylvania. The mysterious gorilla-like animal, which is said to have been seen in various parts of the county in the past 2 weeks, showed up in the outskirts of Darby early this morning. That it is some strange freak of nature is not the least in doubt, according to policemen Smith and Clark, who suddenly came upon the ape-like thing. When they first saw it, it had the aspect of a big, woolly Newfoundland dog. He was coming down the middle of the road, but when it saw them, it stopped, and standing upright, turned around and dashed away on all fours. They gave chase, but were unable to lessen the distance. The thing seemed unusually intelligent and kept just enough distance between it and its pursuers. They chased it around the outskirts of the borough nearly an hour before it gave them the slip and disappeared in the darkness. Both policemen are full of nerve, but at no time could they get within shooting distance of it. Teresa Quinn, the 14-year-old daughter of Policeman Quinn, ran into the house yesterday badly frightened, saying that she had seen a man with a monkey head, but nothing was thought of the affair at the time. Several others have seen it, and the residents are becoming exercised over it. So a lot of people point out, well, it was running on all fours, but this is commonly reported even today. It seems like these creatures walk upright, and then when they really want to move, they can drop to all fours and run more like a like you see a gorilla running on all fours.
All right. So that particular case that centered around that murder in Pennsylvania immediately caught my attention. Can you share that one with us?
Sure. Yeah, this is LaPorte, Pennsylvania, June 14th, and it's, is it 1905 or 6?
I think it's 5.
Okay, so two reports having to do with the mysterious murder at Muncie Valley on the night of December 20th, 1905, of aged Sarah Whitmore, renew public interest in one of the most atrocious killings in the history of Sullivan County, the object of which was presumed to be robbery. although there were other circumstances which pointed to something, a motive more terrible. The little story and a half house directly alongside the Williamsport North Branch Railroad, over which the traffic to Eaglesmere passes, in which the murder was committed, is said now to be haunted, while but a few weeks ago there came a dramatic story from the lumber woods of this county to the effect that a woodsman, finding himself on the verge of death from consumption, sent for the district preacher and made a confession to him that he was the murderer of the old woman and hermit, the crime having been committed with a stick of stove wood because the woman would not permit him to find shelter under her roof that night. The woodsman, so the story ran, had been drinking at the town down the valley and came to the lonely hut late in the evening, seeing a light within, rapped for entrance. But when the old woman saw that it was a stranger, she attempted to push the door shut. Then he forced his way into the room, and then she attacked him with a poker. He grabbed a stick of wood and felled her to the floor. Then, fearing she would scream, he struck her again and again until she was quiet. The report of the woodsman's confession was so vague that but little credence was placed in it, and it would have been passed away as another seven-day gossip if the rumor of a ghost being seen in the blood-smeared cabin had not started the little community down in the valley. Footprints in the snow. Once last winter, when the snow was deepest, a villager who stopped and went in from the road to the little house to peer into the windows reported finding the tracks of a human being, barefoot in the snow, leading from the door into the woods a short distance away. The theory as to these tracks was that the murderer of the old woman, living somewhere in the wilds of the Lower Sullivan in northern Columbia County, had come through the storm to the scene of the crime, in accordance with the old belief that a murderer cannot stay away from the spot where he slew his victim. The finding of tracks, too, recalled the fact that for several seasons, hunters and fishermen have reported seeing a wild man in the territory lying off towards Jameson City. When the body of the old woman was found stretched out on the floor of her kitchen between the stove and the wood box, her blood in pools upon the floor and portions of her brain scattered about the boards of the partition, with a stick of stove wood containing wisps of gray hair on it, it was freely guessed that the slayer of the old Mrs. Whitmere was a maniac. A woodsman was arrested between here and Eaglesmere, and after being in jail here for a few days, was given a hearing and discharged, there being no evidence. Now it is said that at a certain hour at night, a strange light flickers through the little old house, and that one night a few weeks ago, a late passerby heard a scream similar to that heard by a young preacher who was driving toward the house with his horse and buggy on away from his meeting at Strawbridge on the night of the murder. So, yeah, so you have a murder, a mysterious murder, and then bare footprints in the snow, which is, I think, it very unlikely that any humans walking barefoot in the snow. And the strange screams heard as well there. So that's one of those. And of course, people did report seeing wild men in the area. That's one of those, I don't know, but very suspicious kind of cases. And then, of course, mystery lights in Pennsylvania, at least, they're talking about strange lights seen in the cabin, are also associated with these creatures for whatever reason. It's very, very weird and very strange, but in Pennsylvania, you tend to get reports of these mystery lights, be they UFOs or orbs or other strange lights, along with Bigfoot reports.
That is very, very strange and intriguing. This sort of reminded me of the Dyatlov Pass.
Yes.
Yeah. So what do you think about that case?
There are some very interesting ideas about it. And I believe one of the things that gets glossed over about that case is one of the women who was there in her diary reports seeing something following them in the woods, something strange. And I think that often doesn't get reported. So there is this strange element, whatever it was, something obviously, you know, scared them very badly enough to leave their tents. And these were experienced hikers. They weren't novices. They had to know that it was probably death if they left their tents and went out into the weather. So it's a very, very strange case and may or may not be Bigfoot related or I guess Yeti if it's in Asia there.
Yeah. All right. Now, before we go, Timothy, tell my listeners where they can find more information about you and your books.
StrangeFamiliars.com. Strange Familiars is my podcast. If you want to check it out, and any contact information on StrangeFamiliars.com will get you right to me. So you can get my books directly from me. You get them from Amazon. That's fine. Amazon's very fair with their split for independent authors. So I don't mind if people get them from Amazon. But if you want to get signed copies, you can come direct to me.
All right. Thank you for stopping by. Many blessings and best of luck in your future endeavors, Timothy.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
All right. I want to thank my special guest, author and researcher Timothy Renner, for joining me again. The book is called Bigfoot, West Coast Wild Men a history of wild men, gorillas, and other hairy monsters in California, Oregon, and Washington State. And you can pick that up right now to add to your collection on paperback and Kindle Unlimited on Amazon. If you would like to become a member of our Patreon community, we would love to have you. All you have to do is click on the link in the show notes, or you can easily sign up right there on the Mysterious Radio website at mysteriousradio.com. I want to thank my producer tonight, Kim, the Mysterious Radio team, and you for making it worth my while. I want you to have a great night, and I will see you next time on Mysterious Radio.
Like the show? Get more Mysterious Radio on our website. And don't forget to visit our Twitter and Facebook page.